This is Mind Salad, a program of diverse weekly discussions about mental wellness with a rotating panel of licensed professional mental health counselors on a variety of mental health topics with guests and information to help you sort through life struggles. The information that is provided on this program is for informational purposes only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any mental health condition or be a substitute for therapy. This week, your host is Yakita Renfro from New Beginnings Therapy and Healing.
Hello and welcome to Mind Salad, a diverse discussion of mental wellness. I am your host today, Yakita Renfro, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Today's salad topic topping is the life of a foster parent with my awesome guest, Danielle Patterson. If you're just tuning in, you're in for a treat today. We are going to be speaking with a foster parent that's going to be able to share her background and a little bit of the life of a foster parent. Danielle, thank you and welcome for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I've been a foster parent for 3 years with Courage Community Foster Care, and I'm just so glad to be here.
We're going to just jump right in with some of these questions because I'm pretty sure the listeners out there are wanting to know about the life of a foster parent. If you're okay, can you tell a little of your backstory and what kind of was the drive to get you into being a foster parent?
Yeah, so I actually lived in out-of-home care myself as an adolescent, and I kind of wanted to be the person that I felt like I didn't have. I had some great caregivers, and I had some less than ideal caregivers. Mm-hmm. I think everyone tried their best, but I think some of them weren't ideal, and so that drove me into getting my degree in social work and opening my clinic, the Patterson Center for Resiliency, to treat children and adults with trauma, specializing in foster care and adoption, and then eventually becoming a foster parent myself.
That is awesome. I mean, I know there's so much more to that, but thank you for even sharing that. Now, this might be a very, very basic question, but for those of us who, you know, have only heard about it and don't really know about it, what does it mean to be a foster parent?
Gosh, it means a lot of different things. Fostering asks you to do the impossible task of being willing to keep a child forever and also being willing to give that child up today.
Wow.
All at the same time. And so foster care is ideally a temporary, safe, loving home while parents work a treatment plan. Maybe that's therapy, maybe that's parenting classes, maybe that's education and getting a job and housing and things like that so they can regain custody of their children. So we're that temporary home to keep kids safe while parents do what they need to do. And ideally, parents go back, or children go back to their parents. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we're the savior.
Right.
We play a very small role. I'm changing diapers and dropping kids off at school. The parents are doing the hard job if they're dealing with their demons, their trauma, things like that. I always say your child doesn't end up in foster care because you're having a great life yourself.
Right.
There's something going on deeper inside.
So what does it mean to not be a foster parent? In the sense of you, how you were saying it's, we're trying to do the impossible. They're expecting us to do the impossible. What does it look like when you can't do that?
Oh, it's hard. It's really heartbreaking when you know that you're in over your head. Maybe a child has really extreme behaviors. Mm-hmm. Maybe the team is asking you to do impossible things. I had a team one time that basically told me to quit my job so I could transport kids to Denver multiple times a week. And that obviously wasn't going to work. I own the company. I can't quit my job if I own it. So that's really challenging. You know, you're co-parenting with the government. So that brings challenges of its own. If you've ever done anything with the government, you know how challenging it can be to get anything done. And so I think that's the biggest part is you are not the parent.
Right.
You are a parent of many parents who may be involved in in this child's case.
Now, what are some myths about being a foster parent? Because, you know, you hear the stories of, oh, I'm just going to get all this money and it's going to be so great.
Okay, that's not really how that works. You know, we just bought a bigger house so that we can foster. So if we want to talk about, like, how much does it cost to foster versus how much money do you make, I'm in the hole. I'm deeply indebted. So some myths would be that the government's out to steal children. I hear that one a lot. The Families First Act was passed a few years ago, and so that really emphasizes reunifying children with, first, their biological parents, and then, second, with family members, so aunt, uncle, grandparents, something like that. The government actually tries really hard, and I've seen and heard horror stories of kids being stuck in traumatic situations for much longer than they needed to be because the government didn't get involved. And that doesn't mean that the government doesn't make mistakes and that all children in foster care should be there, or, you know, things do happen. But I think that's the first myth. The second one would be that foster care is a free and easy way to adopt.
Right. Right.
Almost all children will be reunified or age out or go to kin, so kin meaning relatives. The goal is reunification, and if your goal is to, I want to adopt an infant, you're going to be heartbroken because that's not the goal. And then I would say that foster children will love you, and it'll be this amazing, beautiful experience. These kids have trauma. Yeah. If they didn't have trauma before, they do now. They were ripped out of their homes unexpectedly.
Right.
That alone is the trauma. And for a lot of kids, they say that that was the trauma. Hmm. That was the most impactful trauma to them, was going to school one day and never going home. And they had no idea when they woke up that morning.
Now, was that because, and this is me kind of assuming, or just from my experience with working with children that were in the system, because they were normalizing the trauma? And, you know, at home, if home was toxic and there was a lot of abuse happening, that became the normal. But taking them out of that home was the abnormal.
Right. Huh. Right. Right. I mean, if you've lived in this experience for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and, right, and your siblings are living in it, maybe you know other people that are living in it, maybe your parents also lived in it themselves. Traumatic, yes. Abnormal, no.
Yeah.
And so for a police officer to show up in the middle of the night with some trash bags and tell you to get your stuff, or the principal to call you down to the office and say, get in the car, you're not going home. I mean, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
For anyone.
Right. I mean, I get it, but just the process sounds, as a child, I can't imagine.
No, I can't imagine. I've heard just really sad stories about how some of these kids are removed from their homes.
Yeah.
And, you know, mothers clutching to their children and police ripping their babies out of their arms. And you know, then the child shows up on your doorstep with that having just happened moments before. But I would say the last myth is that we are saints or angels or something like that. It's always awkward when people say things like that. I don't know how to respond even 3 years into this. We're just normal people doing what we can. And I think we all give back to our communities in different ways, whether we become a teacher or a nurse, or we coach a little league team, or we're just a good neighbor.
Yeah.
We're all giving back in some way. And this is just how my family has chosen to do it.
Well, I think it's awesome. Again, to the listeners, if you're just tuning in, you are in for a treat. I'm your host, Yakita Renfro, at New Beginnings Therapy and Healing, here on KPPF's talk show. And our guest today is Danielle Patterson, and she is a foster parent, kind of sharing the background and the life of a foster parent. So we're asking some questions and just delving into this life. Danielle, what are some of the criteria, and you may not be able to speak for every foster parent, but what's some of the criteria that maybe they're looking for in a parent or family?
Sure. I think almost anyone on paper can become a foster parent. There's a lot of fantastic agencies. We went with Courage Community Foster Care, and we really love the support they provide. But you can be straight, gay, young, old, wealthy, working class, single, married. You can own or rent your home. You can have children, not have children. So, you know, there's a lot of different lifestyles that you can live and still be a very successful foster parent. And I think that's important that a lot of different lifestyles and races and religions and, and families are represented. Because we get children of all sorts of lifestyles,
right,
too. And so that's really important. But not everyone can foster. Not everyone has the time, the resources, the means. And I'm not here to convince people that everyone should foster.
Truth.
So not everyone can foster, but everyone can help a foster parent or can help a biological parent trying to get their children back. So we have a group from Families Together who they bring us food once a week. They drop off dinner. And that's so huge when, okay, we picked up the kid, we've gone to therapy, we had a visit, it's now 6:30, we're just getting home, and someone rolls up with dinner.
Oh, I know that's the answer to the prayer.
That alone is huge. Or a friend, the other day, she drove my kid to therapy for me because I was just having such a busy week. Like simple, tangible things are something that all of us can do.
Yeah, I think that's so great. Like you were talking about the community and giving back. That's another way for someone who may not be a foster parent, but to support a foster parent by giving those rides or bring in dinner. That's another way to be able to give and support. So that's awesome that you have that network too. Now, I've heard so much about adolescents in the system and the impact on their mental health. What about, I'm making up this word if I am, the fosterer? And if you're open, you know, sharing about your well-being, your mental well-being as a foster parent, if that's impacted your role.
Yeah. So, you know, just like being a therapist, none of us get into this because nothing happened.
Right, right.
Most of us are driven to serve in this capacity because we've had some experience, positive or negative, that has motivated us. And so, you know, even if you didn't have some childhood experience, you still have your own stuff somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to really be resolved in that enough and continue to be resolving yes. in that every day, because these kids will trigger you.
Yeah.
The system will trigger you. You see some of the darkest places in the world, seeing child abuse, seeing parents, you know, struggling with substances, seeing them not be able to access mm-hmm. services or what they need to get their children back. And so that takes a lot of toll on people.
Yeah.
And there's what we call vicarious trauma, where I'm not experiencing the trauma, but me observing the trauma
right.
in such an intense capacity is traumatic in itself.
Yeah.
I had a little girl who, you know, I gave her a pear with some meal one day, and she just cried with joy and said, "I've always wanted a pear. I've only seen them on TV."
Mm.
And so things like that, like, oh, like that happens every day, and it just will
yeah.
break your heart
so
every day.
How do you handle it? Because I can only imagine that the children coming from so many backgrounds and, you know, trauma looking different within their homes. How are you handling it?
Yeah, so a lot of different ways. I myself have my own therapist,
yeah.
so she's been wonderful. She needs a raise for all of the work she does. Our clinic, the Patterson Center, we also offer therapy for foster parents specifically.
Good. Yeah.
And all of our clinicians have special training in that, because it's such an odd world that we live in sometimes, and there's so much jargon associated with it and so many just like strange things that happen. Like, you know, I'll go into my therapist's office, you're like, "How many kids do you have this week?" you know, that's a different culture. And so having
right.
providers are especially trained in that. But I'm also really intentional about my yeses and my noes
Truth.
In my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So someone offered us another service the other day, and I was like, you know, we can have the greatest service in the world, but sometimes it's one more appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And is that one more appointment going to help us, or is it going to be, okay, now we have to struggle again
right.
to make this work? So saying things like, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, or I can do this, I can't do that. How can we streamline things? So being really intentional about that. We also have a really strong routine in our home. You know, I order groceries every Tuesday, pick them up every Wednesday. We have to automate some things.
Yeah.
The dog food gets delivered once a month, so some things I don't have to think about. Meal planning, things like that, that's been really important too, to kind of save my sanity. And then I can put more brain space towards other things
yeah.
that are more important.
Now, as a social worker, how do you kind of navigate between, I'm a foster parent, not a social worker today, because I can only see how it may kind of spill into the roles.
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. And I have to always be checking myself. And my agency has been such a support. She's also a social worker. And so I'll talk to her a lot about, like, am I staying in my
yeah.
lane? Or, like, can you say this for me? Because it has to come from a professional right now.
Right.
But that's hard, that sometimes I'm the most qualified person in the room.
Exactly.
But I can't act like I'm the most qualified person in the room. And being on paper the most qualified person in the room doesn't mean I know everything.
Truth.
Often there's a lot of things happening behind the scene that I don't have the legal right to know. I don't know the parents' treatment plan, if parents are attending therapy, things like that. I don't know if a relative in another state is being looked at or not necessarily. And so I have to be very cautious, and I hire really good professionals in our families' lives that I align with philosophically, that can speak when maybe it's not appropriate
right.
for me to
right.
speak. But on the other hand, we run a very therapeutic home because we have those skills and we have
mm-hmm.
those tools to do that. But, you know, I've got a master's degree in this. I have a license in this. And still some days it's hard.
I get it.
It's
yeah,
really hard.
I'm sure. So with the triggers that you see that you spoke about earlier, you know, how do you get that to align with the structure in your home when they're coming in with behaviors that may be triggering?
You know, that's challenging too, in part because of that Families First Act I had referenced earlier. They've shut down a lot of group homes and a lot
mm-hmm.
of what we call higher levels of care, where children with higher needs would be with professionals 24/7. And so that means that children who maybe weren't the appropriate care for the foster care level are now going into foster care homes, which are just normal families. And so we don't always get all the information because the caseworkers are doing their best, but they're desperate to place these children anywhere.
Right.
And so you kind of have to balance, do we place it in a home that's maybe not ideal, which is the child spend another night in the emergency room or in an office or in a hotel with a stranger. And so I get it. It frustrates me, but I also get it. And so we start out right away being very boring.
What do you mean by that?
We start with what's called in the foster care world cocooning.
Okay.
So we stay close to the home. We don't do a lot of stimulation. Yeah. Help them settle in here first whenever possible, rather than let's go to Sky Zone and let's go out to dinner and let's have friends over. And okay, here's like 300 people that you're meeting in the first month. So we do that for kids with, really not even kids with behaviors, but any kid. We also do 40 hours of training a year on therapeutic parenting. And so there's some really wonderful researchers out there like Ross Green, Bessel van der Kolk, Karen Purvis, Sarah Naish. And so we spend a lot of time learning, resourcing, going to support groups, asking professionals. Yeah. This is a full-time job. So yesterday is supposed to be my day off. We had 6 appointments yesterday. and that's part of why I have a day off in the middle of the week is because we have so many appointments a week and so many providers and professionals coming in. It really takes a village and then some to help a whole family recover from trauma.
Now, you that was such a good segue into my next question with you talking about your off day was left with kind of running those errands and the appointments. What does your self-care look like?
Yeah, so luckily my kid right now goes to bed at 7:30 and that's kind of my saving grace right now. So I have a couple of hours. But, you know, I'm usually getting up before the kids so I can have some quiet time, taking the dog for a walk, prioritizing my own physical health with exercise and a good nutritious diet. And, you know, my friends are just so supportive. And I think having a strong support network before you even make the phone call to the agency.
That's a very good point.
Is huge. Important. You know, I watch Harry Potter every week because that is some escape for me. I'll listen to podcasts and things like that and just do what I can to ground myself and regulate myself so that when my kid is screaming, I can be there for that child and keep myself calm, which doesn't mean I'm perfect at it by any means.
Right.
But if I can't keep myself calm, how can I expect a 7-year-old to be calm?
No, that's such a good point, and bring it to reality, you know. And another question I wanted to ask is, I think so many things are from the TV. There's this movie with Mark Wahlberg, and they adopt this foster, and she gives a little struggle, but then they become this happy home. Mind you, it is a movie, but I so appreciate you coming on the show and tuning in on KPPF's talk show, Mind Salad, a diverse discussion about mental wellness with our host, Danielle Patterson, and she's just giving so many nuggets of wisdom about being a foster parent and the reality of what it is. And sometimes it's not always the rainbow, but that harsh reality of the truth, the trauma that comes with it, the dark places kind of that you talked about. But another area that you brought up was, you know, working with the government and the governing agencies over this, maybe not disclosing completely who they are, but what exactly who do they entail? You talked about caseworkers and social workers.
Yeah, so this is really confusing. I think even for me 3 years into it, who does what?
Right.
So we had a staffing yesterday where all the professionals get together, and I think there were 15 people maybe on this call. And so I'm often sitting there in these meetings texting someone else of who's this person?
Right.
They introduce themselves, but I have no idea what that means. So an average team will have caseworkers. So they come from the department or also called DHS or the county. There's attorneys. So the parents will have an attorney. The county has an attorney and the child has an attorney.
Okay.
And there might be more sprinkled in there at different times too. Then there's the actual families, and that might be by parents, that might be also extended family that are just really involved, like a grandparent or someone that's or a neighbor or a teacher who's been a really big support for this child. The schools will be involved, especially if there's an IEP, which a lot of our kids have IEPs for various reasons. The therapists, which when I say therapists, I mean there might be an individual therapist, a family therapist for the child and their family, a family therapist for the child and your family. There might be a skills person that just works on coping skills or social skills. There might be some like music therapist or equine therapist. You might have like 4 or 5 therapists when I say therapist. Yes. And then there's the child placement agency, which when I talk about my agency, that's who I'm referring to. They oversee me. They're kind of my boss. They make sure I'm licensed appropriately and I have all my trainings, and they're kind of my biggest advocate and cheerleader when I need them to be. They also like talk me off the cliff sometimes too.
No, that's good. So how accessible are these individuals to you?
Ooh, well, I'm still not done listing all the people.
Oh,
there's like another like 6 or 7 people involved, visitation workers, supervisors, CASA, court appointed, special advocate, healthcare providers. I could go on all day about who's involved. So the department, this has been a problem for decades. You know, there's one person who might be serving 100 families. Hmm. And so do I get frustrated when I have to ask for something 4 times and sent
and
wait days or weeks? Yes. But also I get it. Too, you know, my question about can the kid get a haircut is not the priority when another family I don't know anything about is blowing up. Hmm. But that's hard.
Right.
That's hard. I'm like, I just want to get this kid's haircut, you know. My agency responds back immediately, but also she's got like 20-30 families. And so it's a little bit different. And I think that's really important. You know, the foster care community is really small, and you learn quickly who's easy to work with and who's not easy to work with. So I have some caseworkers that they'll call me directly on my phone and say, can you take this kid? And because I've worked so well with them in the past, yes. I have other professionals that when I see them attached to a child's case, I have to say no.
Yeah.
Because I know how this is going to end.
Now, do they have a role in the revolving door of children in and out of the homes, in the sense of, can the social worker say, you know what, we're dropping them off tonight and then they come in the morning and take them? Do you have any say of who stays and who goes?
Yes and no. So any foster home can put in what's called a 30-day notice.
Yes.
Meaning the child has to be removed from your home within 30 days. That 30 days is gut-wrenching because by the time you put in your notice, you're in a crisis.
Hmm.
And then you have 30 more days of being in a crisis. And at that point, there's no more supports coming in because the team understandably looks at it like, why would we put more funding into this when it's over?
Yeah.
And by the time you get services in place anyway, it could be months. So that's something I've struggled with a lot is I will ask for a service the first week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my girl I've got now, it was 6 weeks before she got into individual therapy.
Oh.
Before I had permission to get her into individual therapy and then finding the therapist. And
yep.
And so I think there's a revolving door in part because of access to services. And by the time we ask for them and get them approved, that service may be a moot point. And we need actually a higher level of service by then. You know, I think, too, this Families First Act, putting children in homes that are ill-equipped, sometimes that's foster homes, sometimes that's kinship providers. So kinship providers are relatives or family friends who take in the child at the last minute, no preparation like my family's able to do. We are always ready and expecting a child to come. They have no preparation, no training. They get no financial support and no real resources. And then they have the added emotional burden of, this is my sister's kids or this is my daughter's kids. And I don't have to deal with that navigation of those social hierarchies. And so a lot of children will be in 4 or 5 different kinship placements before they're put in foster care. And at that point, the trauma is so high because with every move, it's a trauma.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And so I think then it becomes a revolving door even more because now the child's needs are so high that it kind of feels like, who can help them?
Mm-hmm.
And do we institutionalize a child in a residential treatment facility? Well, then what's it like reintegrating that child into quote-unquote normal life? That's really hard at that point.
Right.
And so, you know, it feels like sometimes once that first 30-day notice is put in, that trajectory has been set. And then it's a revolving door.
Now, with that being said, if you... perfect world had that opportunity, what would be some protocols that you would change or want to implement?
I think first, you know, perfect world, as a clinic owner, I understand why this is not feasible, but perfect world, we would have spots held in clinics that are specially trained to support foster children and foster parents and their biological parents, because it's a nightmare right now, especially in Colorado Springs, calling around 2-month wait if anyone even does call you back. We luckily did get in, but again, that's why you have to have good relationships with providers.
Right.
So you can call and say, hey, I got a kid. Can you take them? You took my other 3 placements and that worked well. So that would be one. And then the second one would be childcare that also saves space for foster children. A lot of us have to say no because it might be a child that needs immediate childcare. Well, same problem. There's nowhere in the city that has immediate childcare.
That's so disheartening to hear. But thankfully, there are foster parents such as yourself that's open to do that. And before we wrap up, Danielle, what are some benefits and maybe last words you like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the biggest reason children end up in foster care is untreated mental health concerns in their original family. And so if we can target those problems, you know, when that parent was 13, 14, 15 and first started showing signs, imagine what their life would be like. And so often the parents don't have access to services until the court orders it and then the court has to pay for it. And that's really heartbreaking. These families didn't have to suffer like this. But it is rewarding. You get to make a difference in a family, even if very small. And, you know, I think it's really a gift to be able to sit with families in their darkest times and be a cheerleader for those families.
I think that's so awesome. And Danielle, I didn't know half the information that you shed light on today, because I come from the clinical aspect of it. So one of the clinicians that would probably be on the team helping, but not understanding. And I can't even say I fully understand, you know, what you do at all. It's just kind of touching the basement. So I feel even better with that. But I just thank you and appreciate you so much for being able to come on the show and even be a little transparent with sharing your background today. So thank you again so much for coming on today. And one last time, can you share your practice?
Yes. I'm Danielle Patterson. I'm the owner and founder of the Patterson Center for Resiliency in Colorado Springs.
Thank you, ma'am. And next week's host for Mind Salad, a diverse discussion about mental wellness, will be Kyle Bridgman from Project Ember Counseling. And our reflection of the day comes from one of the awesome clinicians I have at New Beginnings Therapy and Healing LLC. She mentioned how she sometimes just makes things so much harder for herself and brings up that anxiety that she was trying to push down. And I gave her a simple kind of little statement, told her, work smarter, not harder. And she laughed and said, that'll change my day. So I bid you all well and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Mind Salad, a discussion of mental wellness issues and topics with a rotating panel of mental health providers. Heard every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on KPPF. And be sure to listen to the podcast on Podbean. New Beginnings Therapy and Healing strives to embody the vision and mission to assist and empathetically walk with individuals in this journey called life as they explore, recover, heal, and grow to create the new beginnings they desire to see in themselves. New Beginnings Therapy and Healing is equipped with well-versed staff and clinicians that are prepared to support your mental health journey. If you're struggling and ready to create a new beginning, call today at 719-428-6024. New Beginnings Therapy and Healing.